Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Is it a gadget? Is it a gizmo? No, it's gadgets and gizmos with Steve Kaplan and Simon Rose.
Gadget and gizmos, Kaplan and Rose. What more could people want? Well, plenty of tech, I imagine, as you're going to tell
plenty
us.
Plenty of tech. Yes, indeed. QR codes. Now, QR codes came out actually quite a long time ago, but people couldn't really see the point from them. Some people tried putting them on posters so you could point your phone at it to get a more idea of what was being advertised at you. And then COVID came along and people didn't want to touch anything. So suddenly QR codes started appearing printed on tables in restaurants, for example, so you could download their menus rather than having a physical and possibly germ-ridden piece of paper thrust into your hand. So they've had a bit of a resurgence. And the latest on QR codes is that a developer at Osaka University has come up with 3R QR codes printed inside food.
What?
How about that? Yes.
What? Okay, why and how?
Well, why is a difficult question. The how is that they
your print, usual answer to that is because they can.
Because they can. Well, they print the QR code out of an edible material, and then they bake it inside a biscuit. And you can't see it, but if you hold the biscuit up to a light source, then you can point your camera at it and you can see the silhouette of the QR code, or rather your
because
camera.
Because clearly what we all want to do is be holding biscuits up to the light to read QR codes, which of course could be printed on the packet.
Well, exactly, exactly. I mean, they claim it as possibly an alternative to paper labels on fruit, but I don't know any fruit that's translucent that you could hold. I suppose they could print it on a pepper, and then you could help. But how do you get it inside the pepper? It doesn't make sense.
Apart from anything else, we all loathe those labels on fruit anyway.
Indeed. Well, this would avoid having the labels printed on the fruit. The label would be incorporated, grown inside the... I don't know, it seems a bit ridiculous. But so they've been struggling to find a use for this. And they say this technology could also be used to provide novel food experiences through augmented reality, which is an exciting new food field in the food industry. Now, I don't know if augmented reality is an exciting new field in your food area, but I don't think it really figures in mine.
Okay, so that's not necessarily going to change our lives for the better, or indeed worse,
not
or indeed change them at all for some time to come. So what's next?
Indeed. Well, something that also won't change our lives for the better, but it will change lives for the better amongst a very small group of scientists. It is the world's fastest broadband. And it runs at 46 terabytes a second. That's the speed of data that they can transmit. 46 terabytes. Now, that's a difficult number to make sense of. So I've done a bit of research and a bit of maths for you. And according to my calculations, it means you could download the entire Netflix library in 26 seconds.
Wow.
Wow, indeed. It is the product of the Energy Sciences Network, which they rather uncomfortably abbreviate to ESNET. And it connects the Department of Energy scientists in the United States. 15,000 miles of fiber optic cable snake around between laboratories. Look, they have to send vast amounts of data back and forth.
Okay, so it is actually quite useful. It's not the fact that they do want to download the entire library of Netflix, which will be out of date by the time they've started watching even a few episodes, I should think.
Oh, it'll probably be the case. But, I mean, presumably no buffering while they're streaming. But that's not entirely what they're using it for, as you so rightly say. But it is, it's not available to the rest of us, just these few scientists. But it is pretty good, though, isn't it? Even if we can only look on from the sidelines and gawp.
Yes, I bet they get better customer service if things go wrong as well.
They
yes.
probably do. Yeah. Your call okay. is important to us, so we're going to answer it. When did you ever hear that?
Yeah, let's have one of these. So, onward with more gadgets, more gizmos.
Well, you had a play with my Quest, headsets a while ago, Oculus Quest, then became Facebook Quest, and now it's Meta Quest, but it's the same thing, and you quite enjoyed it. Weren't quite tempted to shell out £300 on one, and you're unlikely to be tempted to shell out $1,500 on the Quest Pro. Now, what is different about the Quest Pro? Well, it's slimmer. It has a higher density of pixels, so the images look that much smoother. But the big deal about it is there are five interior cameras that track your face movements. And Meta, Facebook, whoever, what you want to call them, they say, the purpose of this is that when you have avatars inside games or inside virtual meeting spaces, they can now accurately replicate your eye movements and your facial expressions so that they look, you know, they can look more like you or more like whichever alien you choose to be on that day. Now, sounds like quite a good idea, although it's stupidly expensive. But the trouble is, since Facebook Meta are going ahead and testing shopping in virtual reality, they will gather lots of data about what you're looking at, what your where your eyes are going, what your expressions are like, whether you like something, whether you dislike something. And knowing Facebook, whose business is information, they're not going to discard that information. They're going to gather all kinds of subliminal data on their users. Rather than just saying them, you know, what did you think of this product? Please give it a review.
Yes.
They'll be able to analyze exactly how you felt about it non-verbally, which I think is a very dangerous idea.
Of course. And as Gavin Oldham, the founder of Share Radio, would argue and regularly does in his commentaries in the newsletter, I mean, he feels that groups like Meta, Facebook and others, as they gather data, should be actually returning some of the money that they derive from this in the form of shares. He feels everybody is contributing to the success of these companies and should, as a result, become shareholders.
I think that's an excellent idea. I wish him luck in persuading them.
Yes, exactly. Not sure it's going to happen. But, you know, if he bangs the drum loud enough, eventually these people will wake up to the fact that they are making these companies rich by giving them things for free.
Yes, exactly. They might give something
but
back.
They're certainly not giving you the new Quest Pro for free.
They are not. Maybe they don't listen to Share Radio. Who knows? Maybe they will. Maybe they'll be tempted to send me one just so I can try it out. But then will I try it out? Do I want my eyes tracked by Facebook? I'm not sure I do. Mm. They track enough about me as it is.
Yeah. So
anyway, move on. Well, you complained last week that we hadn't had an app of the week for some time. So let's have an app of the week right now. And that's quite a fanfare, and a fanfare indeed. Back at the beginning of September, on this very show, we talked about a website called possibly La La La, LAAL.AI.
Yes. I remember.
Which could separate music from singing.
Yes.
And you weren't terribly impressed by
the
results.
George Formby Society, yes.
Yes.
Great
well,
new backings, taking the orchestras away. Fantastic.
Yes. There's a new app in town that does the job vastly better.
Fantastic.
It's called Moises, as in noises with an M. Moises. And it separates out musical instruments. Not only can it separate out the voice, but it can also, it identifies the music, splits it into voice, bass, drums, and everything else. And then you can choose what you want to take out or what you want to just reduce in volume. So let's have a listen. Here's the original of a song by ZTA Messiah called What a Ting. Here it is leading into the chorus.
No need to fear now. What's going on here now? It's all very clear now. We've all gone crazy. What a ting, what a ting.
Right.
So here it is, with the vocal taken out using this app.
That's pretty good.
Pretty
seamless.
last time
we could vaguely hear.
Yeah.
Little, you were with headphones on, you could vaguely hear.
But this time you can't. And you can choose what to put back in. So here's a version with just the vocal and the bass line.
No need to fear now. What's going on here now?
now. It's all very clear now. We've all gone crazy. What a ting, what a ting, dong.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive.
It's pretty impressive. Also, while you're playing the song, it shows you the chords. Not just the chord that's currently being played, but the chord that comes next. So you can get your ukulele fingers ready for the next chord. It interprets them from the song. It also gives you the ability to transpose the song. So if you're, saying playing an instrument, you think, well, I can't play those chords, they're too complicated. It's often fixed by moving it, say, up or down a semitone. So here is the same song shifted up a semitone without speeding it up.
No need to fear now. What's going on here now? It's all very clear now. We've all gone crazy. What a ting, what a ting.
Yeah, the actual transposing. I mean, I've got apps and programs for doing that. That's relatively common, but very clever.
It is very, very clever, isn't it?
And is it very expensive?
You can use it for free for up to 5 minutes a song, since most songs don't last longer than 5 minutes. That's no problem. But the limited amount gives you four instruments rather than five. You can't transpose more than the semitone in each direction. And there's a few other things. If you're serious about this, £4 a month, or £35 a year, which is actually an incredible bargain for what it does. And it's something that I think serious
musicians
really are going to look at. It's called Moises. It's available for both iOS and Android, and it is just astonishing.
So it's iOS and not... so it's for your phone, not your computer.
Absolutely, yes. It's for your, it's for
it's
your phone.
It's much harder. I would find much harder to use, I confess.
Oh, why? Well, you can always export the song. What's fiddly? Playing music is fiddly on a phone?
I find it very... Yes, and editing is incredibly difficult.
Well, you don't have to do any editing.
Sliders. I'm willing to bet... you can take out certain instruments, so I bet it doesn't recognise the banjo ukulele, I imagine, as an instrument. You might have to edit around it. I find doing almost anything on my phone far too fiddly compared to... editing images, editing music, everything I would do on a computer, not on a phone.
Yes.
Even doing my bank, all bank stuff I don't want to do on the phone.
Bank stuff is much easier on a phone.
But yeah,
anyway,
much easier to
I won't
go
into that.
Yeah.
There's also that.
Time, anyways, for us to pause for breath here.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Sharing ideas about money. This is Share Radio.
This is Simon Rose. You're listening to Gadget and Gizmos with Steve Kaplan on Share Radio. Yes, I mean, I like the sound of it until you told me I couldn't do it on my desktop computer. So I'll probably...
Oh, it's very easy to use on your phone. And then you can export the track to your computer if you want to just play along to it.
Yeah. Okay, well, I will try it, but I'm just not convinced it'll do what I want.
Brilliant.
Can actually cope with it.
It will do what you want in the way you can cope with it. Take my word for it.
Okay. See. Okay. What now?
Well, let us move on to fake reviews on Amazon. We've been told about fake reviews on Amazon, but how prevalent actually is it? Well, there's a company called the Bespoke Software Development Co. who have done some research into this. And they found that the worst offenders for fake reviews are, technology. With an average of 1,351 fake reviews per item. A total of 67,000 fake reviews. They reckon 16% of the tech reviews are fakes. The next one coming along, which is really surprising, is books, with an average of slightly over 1,000 fake reviews per item. Now, I don't know why people would give fake reviews to books. It seems most surprising, but apparently they do. I don't know what they say in them. Total of 50,000 fake reviews, 25%. So a higher percentage.
But apart from anything else, books aren't very expensive. So why would you... I can understand it with expensive tech items that you want to shift. But, I mean, books aren't very expensive by and large, unless they're academic.
Push the star rating up to put it up the bestsellers list. I mean, it's not a new thing. Back in the day when Top of the Pops used to compile its charts, you know, once a week, maybe they still do in some form. Record labels would regularly go out on the Thursday morning to the record shops that they knew were monitored and buy up their entire stock of the single they were trying to promote.
Yes,
you know, it works. And third, which actually has the highest percentage of fake reviews, clothes. An average of 809 fake reviews per item. Total of 40,000 fake reviews, 36%. 36% of clothing reviews are fake.
Extraordinary. I mean, a lot of things I look at don't even have 809 reviews altogether. So
it's very surprising, isn't it?
Go on.
A really curious fact. The most faked about item on Amazon, the product with the most fake reviews, is the Blink video doorbell. 29% of the reviews are fake. What is surprising about that, frankly, is that the Blink video doorbell is owned by Amazon.
So you think Amazon's faking its own reviews?
Well, it seems most unlikely, but who else would be doing it? Who else?
But how do they tell if your review is fake? And more importantly, how do we tell if your reviews are fake?
Well, that's a very good question. You should probably immediately discount any one-star reviews because that's going to be just people with a gripe. You know, it didn't arrive. The delivery man left it on the doorstep and he got wet, that kind of thing.
Well, one of the one-star reviews that I do look at basically say it doesn't work.
Yes, but it's only a few one-star reviews and a whole load of three- and four-star reviews, then maybe that person just got it wrong.
Yes.
So you should discount that. Five-star reviews, nothing is really that good. Mm. Very few things are that good. Well, apart from the Moises app, I might give that five stars. So you want to watch out for that. Curiously, the Blink video doorbell is actually the number two video doorbell on Amazon. The most popular one is the Ring video doorbell. Ring, curiously enough, also owned by Amazon. So I don't know what they're doing there.
So we still don't really know how to tell if they're fake. What I don't know is how do bespoke software development company themselves work out what was fake and what wasn't.
They probably use an algorithm of some kind.
Oh, right, okay.
Unless, of course, this is entirely a fake news story in itself. Well, yes. And we've just been sold and done by their PR company.
Yes, but as we know, that would never happen. Here's another one of these. Where are you taking us now?
Well, we're going to talk about energy. Are you feeling energetic?
No.
No. Okay, well, this could help.
I'm feeling hungry.
So solar panels on roofs generate a reasonable amount of energy, depending on the weather, of course.
Yes.
But they take up quite a lot of space. Aeromine from the University of Houston is a motionless rooftop wind generator that they say is 50% more energy generation than the same cost of solar panels, taking up 10% of the roof space. Now, unlike solar panels, which tend to be flat and barely visible from below, these things are about 3 meters tall. And they stand on boxes that are about 2 meters tall. So you're not going to see them on any domestic roofs anytime soon, but you may well see them on tower blocks. And what's clever about them is that they make no noise because they have no moving parts. They have two vertical turbines shaped a bit like plane blades, or in fact like turbine blades. And air blows through them, creates a low pressure vacuum, and it's that vacuum in the central pole that drives the turbine. So it could be a very clever way of generating electricity. Interestingly, it's a very similar method to another new generation platform called the UniWave, which uses wave swell energy. Now, people have made lots of devices in the past to harness the power of waves, But the trouble is that they corrode very easily because they're being immersed in seawater for long periods, which is always a very difficult thing for just about anything. So what these people have come up with is a way of generating the power without immersing the actual moving part, the turbine itself, in seawater. And the way it works is like a blowhole. Well, I don't know if you've ever seen blowholes, but blowholes are where there's an underwater cavity that for some reason has an outlet above the water. The waves go in, and the pressure of the waves compresses the water, and it fires out of the top of the blowhole.
Right.
Quite impressive to see. This works somewhat like that. The waves go in, and as they go in, they push a combination of water and air up a channel through a valve. As the wave recedes, the valve closes, which produces a powerful vacuum inside that channel. And that vacuum is used to suck air in at the top, which goes through a turbine and therefore drives the turbine round. And their test results are absolutely extraordinary. It seems to have massive power generating capability at relatively low cost. And they can be put anywhere. And the thing about wave power, unlike wind power and solar power, is that it goes all the time. It doesn't depend on the weather. There are always waves. So this could be really impressive. Something to watch. It does.
And how far into the distance is this?
They have made one test unit, which they have deployed off the coast of Australia. And their data, as I say, looks very good so far. So now they're going to gear up and put a whole row of them in. They're quite big. You know, they're the size of a large house. So they're not small things, but they do generate a lot of power. So and free energy. And free energy is, of course,
I mean, wind turbines are small.
No, indeed. These are chunkier than wind turbines.
Yes, probably less dangerous to bird life, I would imagine.
I don't know what they're like with sea life.
Of course, they poor bloody fish could blow that through. Yes,
they could.
Yes, well, we'll find out in due course, I'm sure.
Although, unlikely, because the fish don't actually get sucked up inside it. It's the air that gets compressed by the wave power. Anyway, so you've got all this power. How do you send it around? There have been many plans for space-based solar power transmitters. So they could harvest solar energy in space where there's no clouds, so they can rely on it more. The trouble is they'd need a transmitter more than a mile in diameter to actually send a couple of gigawatts back to Earth, which is a difficult thing to build in space. Well, the New Zealand company Emerod thinks it has a solution, which is near-field energy beaming power from the solar panels on the ground to low orbit satellites that can then beam it around the planet wherever it's needed. They have done a demonstration to the European Space Agency, and they've managed to beam power 200 meters, not quite as far as you'd need to get it from a satellite back to Earth, but they seem quite impressed. Who knows? It might work. It's interesting, as a little sideline here, that the World Wireless System was designed by no less a person than Nikola Tesla in 1900. And he started off by trying to find ways of transmitting messages, not through wires, but just through the air. And he got the banker J.P. Morgan invested in it. When he told him he was switching to power, J.P. Morgan pulled his investment, saying, "It's all very well sending this power around for free, but where do we put the meter?"
Well, I can quite understand him saying that if he's funding it.
Yes, yes, yes. And that could be the reason why Tesla didn't manage to develop it. So we couldn't have had it for 100 years or more.
Oh, that's extraordinary. Have you got time for something else very quickly, or should we say goodbye now?
Very quickly, we can talk about the optical microphone developed by Carnegie Mellon University, which can separate different instruments in an orchestra by pointing a camera at a laser beam that is shining at one of the instruments, reading the speckle pattern on the surface, interpreting the vibrations from that, and then understanding what's being played from interpreting those vibrations.
Okay.
Exactly. That's a good reaction. So the idea is that you have an instrument, you can pick up, say, one violin in an orchestra, point this laser at it, trying to avoid the violinist's eyes, of course.
Oh, and I then see. The camera
picks up the vibrations from the diffusion of the laser pattern and therefore manages to reinterpret it. And I've heard the results, and they are interesting. Not interesting in the sense of really interesting. Interesting in the sense of a little way to go, chaps.
Oh, okay. Because presumably spy services will be quite interested in doing the same thing, pointing microphones at people in crowds and hearing.
I think they almost certainly already do that.
Yeah. Well, okay. Thank you very much indeed. That's Steve Kaplan. And that's it for this edition of Gadgets and Gizmos. We'll be back with more at the same time next week.
Is it a gadget? Is it a gizmo? No, it's Gadgets and Gizmos with Steve Kaplan and Simon Rose.